Hi.
Blog Talk Radio.
Are we on live now?
I think we are. Hi,
okay.
Tom.
Hello, Carolyn.
Hi.
Leavitt. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. We're here to talk about your book and my book.
And yours too.
Yes. And how are you on this one of the last days of the year?
I'm good. I'm doing really good.
And I should say you are the author of many novels, and most recently you are the author of Pictures of You, a wonderful book which was published by Algonquin Books, and it's in its fourth printing now. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
Now, is that a landmark occasion for you in terms of the many novels you've written? Is this, you know, is this a bestseller, so to speak?
It is. I always tell people that I'm the poster girl for second chances. Pictures of You is my ninth novel, and I've actually had five other publishers before this one, four which went out of business, and two which totally ignored me and wouldn't take my calls. And my books previous to Pictures of You all had really good reviews, but absolutely no sales whatsoever. And Pictures of You was actually rejected from my last publisher. And the words they used was, it just wasn't special enough. So I just assumed that my career was over, because if you have nine novels and you don't have any sales and nobody really knows who you are, you really are in trouble. And I was lucky enough to be picked up by Algonquin Books, and they told me they were going to change my career, and they proceeded to do it. The book really went into three printings before it got published. It became a New York Times bestseller and a Costco Penny's Pick, and it's gotten on Kirkus and San Francisco Chronicle and Providence Journal Best Books of the Year list, and it's been an amazing journey for me. I feel like I literally went from having no career to all of a sudden I'm starting to have a career. So it's very, very gratifying.
Well, congratulations. That's wonderful. I felt like, you know, you were my writing teacher for a number of years, and you nursed me through writing my first novel. But I always felt like you had this amazing career, and you were, you know, vibrantly alive in the business of writing book, in the art and commerce and business of writing novels. But I know that, you know, as a screenwriter, we're always, you know, wanting things to sort of break out of the pack, and we never know what's going to break out of the pack. Do you feel like this one broke out, so to speak, because?
Oh, it definitely did. It definitely did. Everything is very, very different now. But I actually wanted to ask you about your novel, Peloponnesia, which I love, which you started in my class, because I know you started, you began as a screenwriter, and you wrote the screenplay for Cocoon and a lot of other movies. What made you decide that you wanted to move from scripts into novels, and what was that process like for you?
It's been fun. It's been difficult, and it's been gratifying so far. I just had it in my mind that I wanted to write some fiction. I didn't start out writing screenplays. I started out writing humorous pieces and poems and plays, and just doing all kinds of different creative writing. And I then gravitated to film and photography, and I completely got away from writing anything other than screenplays, and also kind of reading anything other than screenplays. I read a lot of nonfiction, but I had this long
mm-hmm.
career as a screenwriter, and I just decided one day that I had 10 pages, and I actually had a class that I was teaching a class at UCLA Extension, and they give you a free class every semester, and I had a free class that I could take, and usually my wife took them. She's a poet, and she would take these classes and these poetry classes, and she found no class that she wanted. And I thought, well, we shouldn't let this go to waste. I should just take a novel writing class. And I started that, and I just got compulsive, and I just started writing. And the book just was pouring out of me. It found it easy to get the pages done. And the class really helped. Or in the numerous classes, I ended up taking five of them probably, and the last four were yours, I believe. But I found the tremendous relief for me was doing internal monologues, and my book may suffer a little bit from having so many internal monologues, but I really enjoyed getting into people's heads and being able to speak from inside their heads, and that was, and just giving voice to that was just fun for me, and I found myself really living in these characters, and I also was, I was writing about Hollywood, and I started out trying to write something that was sort of, I thought it was going to be a bit scathing about producers and the business, and I and my the producer who was sort of, I had this antipathy for when I started, he ended up becoming the protagonist, and I ended up having the most compassion for him, I think, of any of the characters in the book. So it's just an interesting journey. It was an interesting way to examine what I'd been doing and the life I'd been living as a screenwriter for all this time. So that's
yeah. I was just going to say that the thing that I love so much about the book, Polyphonisia, was it's really vivid, and the characters are so alive, they're breathing on the page. And I was wondering if you thought that having written scripts helped you to get that across, because I'm finding now that I'm writing scripts as well as novels, that I'm using some of the things that I used to write novels to write scripts. So did you feel that you were using some of the techniques you knew as a screenwriter to help you with the novel?
I think that I really ended, as a writer, I ended up coming up through dramatic writing. So I'd written some plays before I came out here and before I wrote the screenplay that I wrote to try and break into the business, so to speak, which I didn't break into the business with, but it was my first real script.
Mm-hmm.
I studied acting to help me with my screenwriting. So I sort of learned about the biographies of characters and inner monologues and spines of scenes and all these different things that are in dramatic writing as an actor that you use to analyze characters. And I think that I ended up embodying that in my writing as a screenwriter. So I think that I instinctively try to find voice for my characters and try to imagine. I don't imagine stars or actors in the parts. I really try to imagine the people. And I think that in screenwriting, you end up being restrained by the form, by the craft of the form. And it's a great form, but it's really difficult to do well, I think. And it's hard. Some projects, it's elusive on a lot of projects. Sometimes it's easier than others for a specific writer on a given project. But, yeah, I feel like I'm bringing components of that to the novel writing, but I'm trying to master the elements of novel writing that are beyond that as well.
Okay, what are you writing now? Can you talk about that?
What I'm working on today is I optioned a book about Harry Harlow called Lovecoon Park with the producer Howard Dratch, and we've been trying to put it together for a number of years now. It's a nonfiction. It's a true story about this psychology professor researcher at the University of Wisconsin who proved the idea in the lab that animals have emotions, that primates other than humans experience love. And he kind of pushed aside behavioral theories in a number of areas in research psychology and changed the way people behave in certain ways based on, you know, how he saw what animals, the way that animals actually had emotions with each other. So I've been working on a script adaptation for this for a long time, and it's been eluding me, and we got a little money recently, so I've been forced to actually sit down and write. So that's what I'm working on right this moment. And I'm trying. I have two novels that I started that I'm trying to do pages on as well. And what are you? You just finished a new novel. Is that true?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I sold my next novel. It's currently being called Is It Tomorrow? To Algonquin again. It's set in the 50s, and it's sort of all about Cold War paranoia. And right now, it's with my editor. I'm waiting to get revisions, but it's not due out for publication until probably the spring of 2012 or maybe 2013. I'm not really sure. So because I can't stand any of the vacuums, I've tried to start another novel, and I'm also trying to write a script. So I like to be as busy as possible. Don't you?
I would rather not be that busy, but I find myself
really
instinctively trying to stay busy and always working on things at different times. So I am that way. Is the screenplay based on one of your books, or is it an original screenplay?
Yeah, the only original script I've ever written was for it was for a children's cartoon that was on Nickelodeon called Doug, about an adolescent. And I actually got I was a finalist in the Nickelodeon Screenwriting Fellowships. And I thought I was going to get this deal, but I never did. I made it as far as finalist, and that was it. So all of my other scripts.
Doug is a beloved show. Doug is the show that people talk about now. It sort of had this. It's never really gone away for so many
people. I love that show. I actually recently wrote to Nickelodeon because they said they were thinking of bringing the shows back, and I wanted to write for Doug, and they said, no, they're just bringing back the old show. So that was really disappointing. But it was really fun to write. It was really, you know, because it was so short. It's only a half-hour show. So you could really put your all into this script, and it was just so much fun to do it.
And what's the script that you're writing now?
I really want to go to Sundance. They have this screenwriters lab. So I'm trying to, I wrote a script actually for Pictures of You. And I finished that and I put that aside. And now I'm trying to do a script for Is It Tomorrow, the book that isn't out yet. And it's difficult because the story changes so much when you take it from a novel to a film, and there's so many constraints, and which is why I was so interested in how you've moved from a screenwriter to a novelist. Well, I'm moving from a novelist to a screenwriter, sort of, hopefully.
Or back and forth.
Back and forth.
Writing novels. So you finished your manuscript, and then you immediately of your new book, and you immediately and both of your most recent books, and you immediately started writing screenplays.
I did. I'm very obsessive. I did. Also, I find it really relaxing because the story's already there. So it's sort of like working with a puzzle, just rearranging the pieces so they form a coherent script, which is different from the novel. And it also sort of primes me a little bit before I jump back into writing the new novel that I'm working on, which for me is much, much more difficult. And I always feel much, much more that I'm drowning writing a novel than I am when I'm writing the script.
And
but maybe
what's your starting point for your most recent books? I mean, do you start with a kernel of an idea or an image, or how do they begin for you?
I'm going to ask you the same question when I'm done. For me, it usually starts with something that's obsessing me or haunting me or something I can't figure out the answer to. For Pictures of You, it was because I'm so completely phobic about being in a car or driving a car. I don't drive at all. And I was having all these dreams about car crashes, and I kept trying to think, well, what is this about? Like, where does this phobia come from? And the more I was thinking about it, the more I would have images of, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? And for me, that would be if I was in a car and I killed somebody, and even though it wasn't my fault, how do you deal with that kind of grief? And for me, that was the question of the novel. So all I had to do was figure out the people who would sort of live out that question and provide some sort of answer or not. So what about for you? Like when you started Peloponnesia,
That's such a wonderful way to be able to work. I mean, to be able to take your own fear and your own dreams about your fear and find a way to work through it in that form. It's brilliant. It's just brilliant. And the book reflects that. The strength of the book is clearly, you know, your ability to go inside yourself in such a deep way and find a way to give voice to those emotions that you feel. It's great. which is great.
Thank you. Well, I think it comes with, I always tell my students that whenever you're writing anything, not to think of the audience, because so many people feel, you know, they want to write this book and they want it to be a bestseller and they want to have all these audiences. But if you do that, then you generally don't reach the kind of audience you reach if you instead just write the book that you are desperate to read yourself, that, you know, where you're writing about the things that you just have to know about and have to figure out. And when you become brave like that, that's when I feel that you reach more universal audience and people respond to that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've been doing these interviews for this class, Network Hollywood, that I teach with agents and producers and some screenwriters and managers, and they're, you know, and the students are trying to chase this idea. Many of them, they are writing from their hearts, and they are just writing instinctively what they should be writing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they also will step back if they're not seeing success and start going, what should I write? Oh, I should be writing this. This is what I wrote this, and it didn't get me where I wanted to go. So I should be writing that. And they look externally to what they should be writing, and then when you speak to the people who are reading the material and looking for things to make into films, what they're saying over and over again is that they just want to see things that are well done, and they don't care about that. And yeah, genre, you know, and niches of, you know, kinds of films and all that are important, but they're looking for just well-executed material, and they're looking for original voices, and that's not going to really happen for the most part. You can't fake writing something that's in your own voice or is original by doing something that's not what you really want to write or should be writing.
Right. Right. And you can usually tell when people are trying to write for the market, because it starts to have this sort of synthetic feel to it, and it doesn't move you. And so I just, you know, I certainly think about my audience when a book is written, but I never really do it while I'm doing the writing. It's a very personal, intense sort of time. So when you start writing, do you have an image, or do you have an idea? When you started writing Polynesia, did you know what you wanted to say?
I really didn't know exactly what I wanted to say. I knew that I wanted to write about the relationship of a creative work to people other than the person who had written it, to the people who had to put it into, who had to work with that piece of material. And I wanted to try and build this, you know, I had this idea, which is kind of a joke, that the producer thought he was the material, that he thought he was living inside the script. And I tried to find a way to justify that dramatically and make it work. And so it ended up becoming his story, because all of this, everything emanated from what was in the script and how he filtered his life through the script. So I was just trying to explore that and just learn more. I feel like, to some extent, whatever else I did, I feel like I successfully grew to understand that kind of relationship, the relationship. Because a lot, you know, back when I started, a producer, Richard Zanuck, said to me, you know, I was working on Cocoon, and we were working with Ron Howard, or working with Robert Zemeckis, one of these guys, and, you know, I was having a tough time with one of them, and he said to me, you know, the director always wants the writer to eventually disappear. And I was surprised by that, and it's not always true, you know, there are some very great, you know, it's less true now, but to some extent, it's just that in order to do their work, the director needs to feel like it's his project. Producer feels the same way. The producer more so to some extent. They need to feel complete ownership, and that they, you know, and they may be emotionally detached from it in more ways than a director might be ultimately. But, and the paradox is that you want to find a producer or a director who are complete, who feel like they can embody it, who absorb the material so it becomes their material. And so you live with that paradox that you, in order to have it be realized well, if you're only the writer, you want them to embody it, so you want them to usurp it from you to some extent. So that's the subject of this thing.
So what does it feel like now that you're the total owner of your novel and there's nobody else around there? Does it feel freeing and euphoric, or does it feel scary?
It feels good. I feel like I take full responsibility for it. It's mine. I feel good about that. I feel like the business has also changed a lot, in that you can't count, that everybody is more, as much as I've always been an independent contractor and all, you know, anybody in the writer's guild, you are independent contractors in television and film, in terms of how you're hired and all that. That today, that people really are more, you know, that it's a do-it-yourself world in so many ways. But yeah, I think that just having this self-contained thing, it, working in this medium, working as a doing writing a novel, when I hand it to somebody, I'm transmitting to them the entire vision of it, and they don't need any tools other than their eyes and their minds to see whatever vision I was trying to put on the page. So that's just, there's something entirely wonderful about that.
It is wonderful. It really is something magical about that. So when you're doing all your writing, do you show your pages to people, or what's your whole writing process like?
I really don't. I recently joined a writing workshop with Dina Metzger, which met this year, and I actually never read pages in there. I did a lot of writing for the workshop, but now I really try to just work on my own until I have to show it to people, and then I will show them pages once something's done. But with my first novel, I wrote it in a workshop, so I was showing pages all the time, and that encouragement really helped me to keep going, and the feedback, you know, from the workshop was really, you know, really helped me. But for the most part, with screenplays, I just don't show them to anyone. I show them, you know, I try and work on them, and then show them to the producer and get a consultation on whoever I can, you know, before handing in a draft that's really important. I will show it to a couple of people probably to get some feedback. How about you? I mean, do you write chronologically? I mean, was your first draft of Pictures of You this? If I read your first draft, would it be in the same order and very similar?
No. I do about 20 drafts, and I'm actually not exaggerating. I start out with, and I actually only started doing this recently, where I write really detailed 10-page synopsises of what I think the story is and where it might be headed before I even start the first chapter. And the synopsis is usually chronological, but I like to move back and forth in time a lot, so I'll rearrange those parts as I write.
Do you do that on cards at first? Or
no,
just...
no. If I did it on cards, I'd just lose the cards. I do it on the computer so I can sort of move it around. And after I write the synopsis, I show it to about 4 different people so they can sort of say, like, well, this is a story hole, or I don't believe this, or how would this happen? And I know that synopsis, I keep rewriting it as I'm rewriting the novel because I know that it's going to change. But I need that synopsis like a life raft, because it proves to me that I can write a story, that I know that a story has a beginning, middle, and an end. And even though I feel like the novel is terrible at any one stage, I have this synopsis that sort of compels me to keep going. But Pictures of You had about 5 drafts, and then I showed it to people, and then I did another 2 drafts, and then I showed it to my agent, and she, honest to God, wanted 3 more drafts, so I did 3 more drafts for her, and these are complete drafts. And then when I sold
when
it to Algonquin, they wanted another draft.
When you say a complete draft, that means you rearrange things, you rewrote scenes.
It usually means where they would say, you know, the beginning should be closer to the end, or at one point there was my agent felt that there was a minor character who should have been more of a major character, so that meant strengthening the character arc. Sometimes motivations were too muddy, so I had to strengthen those. But, I mean, you know, when you change one thing in chapter one, it changes everything in every other chapter, because everything's all sort of interconnected. So there's a whole lot of rewriting going on all the time.
How, like, in your synopsis, let me just go back to one question. In your synopsis, how is it slug lines, or, you know, is it a paragraph for each section or chapter?
No, it's written just like a story, you know, just like you were telling somebody what the story is about. You know, like the book starts with this and this and this event happened, and then this happens, and then this happens, and meanwhile this is going on, and blah 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 blah, and it's very, very detailed. And I need it also because as I'm writing the novel, it makes it seem not such an insurmountable task, because I can take, say, two paragraphs from the synopsis and say, okay, this is what I'm going to be working on today. I'm just going to do this little paragraph, and then that's something I can tackle and handle and push on a little.
Yeah, I can relate to that. My joke is that on any given day, I'm the idiot that I hired to work on the pages that day. I just make myself do the best I can for that other voice that's trying to do something really great. That process of getting that synopsis, how long does that take? I mean, how much time do you spend rewriting that before you start writing your first draft?
A long time. It takes me about, I would say, 4 months to do it, and that's 4 to 6 hours a day just working on that to get the story down. And then, of course, that changes. It's just, I just want it to be enough so that it feels like there's a beginning, middle, and end, and there's characters with arcs, and there's, you know, some reversals and moral choices and stuff, and I just need to have that. But that's probably the biggest part of the work and the hardest, because there's nothing there. You're sort of pulling ideas out of the air to try to figure out this story, and then it doesn't start to come alive and breathe until you're doing the actual writing.
And then, so then when you are writing the pages, you have that out, your synopsis to the side, and on a given day you decide, I'm going to, you know, it's Monday, I'm going to do this set of scenes or this sequence, or how do you divide it up, or just I'm going to get through as many pages as I can?
I try to start at the beginning and push through. Sometimes when I'm stuck, I'll go to the end to a scene that I really want to write, you know, and usually those are the scenes that have a lot of drama and conflict in them, and those are the most fun to write. So I do move around, but I try to stay on that linear focus. What about you?
I try to write in order, but you know, with my novel, I didn't really have. I had a sketch of it. I did have a few pages, but it wasn't that precise. And I just I worked more instinctively and sort of found my way through it. But with screenwriting, I never write that way. I always have an outline. I spend forever on. You know, it's very much what you just described, spending months on an outline. And then going to script. I just spent I've done probably 14 outlines for Love at Goon Park, and I finally realized I had this. There's been this sort of evolution of what I had this notion of doing it from one of the test animals' point of view, and I told my producer about it. This was about a year ago. I told my producer about it, and he just thought I was crazy. He just didn't think it would work, and then finally I realized much later that that's the only way to do it. So now, and it's sort of, I haven't started the pages, but it's sort of this whole, it's sort of seeing it from whole new places, having the animal tell the scientist story rather than having the scientist tell the animal.
Oh, I think that's a great way to do it. That's really original.
But it took forever to get to that point, and I'm hoping that writing the pages will now be fun and easy, and also it gives me a way to do it from a different, you know, perspective. Just a way to look. It'll be just interesting to see how the scenes play if I'm working from that angle. So, and it's a challenge. But, and then how many pages a day you write for? Like, what's your writing schedule like? I know you
do. God. It depends on the day. I try to be at my desk for at least 4 hours a day, and usually after 4 hours, I'm toast. Sometimes I will do 6 hours a day, but usually that's when I'm doing revisions, when I'm really under the gun, or if I have a deadline. It depends on the page numbers. Some days I will be at my desk for 4 hours, and I will have half a page done. Other days it works out a little better, and I'll have like maybe 6 pages done. I've never ever had more than 8 pages in a day. It's really a slow process for me. There's a lot of just sitting and staring at the computer, and you know, wondering what where to go and what my next stage should be. What about you? Do you have a set schedule?
And you work 5 days a week or 6 days a week?
No, I don't. I try not to work on the weekends because I tend to be really obsessive, and I feel like it's important for me to get out in the world and, you know, see friends or take a walk.
Absolutely.
Or do things. And
I'm relieved that you told me that. If you told me that you work 7 days a week, I would.
Oh no, never. No. I
work during the week. I actually on Saturdays I do in the afternoon. If I'm really on something, I'll go in the afternoon and spend a couple of hours. But generally, you know, I'm good for two and a half solid hours in the morning, and then in the afternoon another hour and a half, but probably not writing, probably looking at the outline and
Right. Looking
at what I did. That kind of process. I find that if I'm really concentrating for 2 or 3 hours, that I just, you know, and then I do other stuff. But you also teach and you read
Yep.
a lot. How do
Yep.
you? What's your schedule with everything else that you do?
I do the writing first. I get up in the morning and I do the writing first, and then I check in on the class. And you know, the classes are always really, really fun, because a lot of times you forget stuff about technique, and when you have to teach it to somebody, then you remember. And plus, in looking at all this student work, not only is it exciting when you find somebody who's really talented, but also in looking at a piece of work and being able to figure out, well, why isn't this working, and how do you get it to work? It helps me with my own work, and it also makes me feel that I know something about writing. So I don't. So when I get depressed in those dark moments where I think, what was I ever thinking trying to write a novel? Then you remember, oh yeah, I know the technique. So then I do the class, and I review for a lot of different places, and usually I read those books at night before I go to sleep, or sometimes during the day I'll do it, because you have to take notes on them, and that sort of fills in there.
So how many books a week do you have to read, or how many do you read for pleasure, and how many do you read for, you know, for reviewing, or six books to review that are a pleasure?
I'm almost always reading for review. I mean, a book might start out reading for pleasure, but if I like it, then I pitch it, because then I want to review it. So there's really no real line between them. I would say I read about, I must read like 4 or 5 books a week. So I'm always reading something. But actually the most interesting books are the ones that are assigned to me, because usually they're books that I wouldn't have thought of picking for myself. I've been getting a lot of nonfiction books from People magazine to read, and the titles have been great. They've been just really interesting historical books or biographies, or, you know, just things that I probably wouldn't have thought to pick up.
That's great.
And, you know, the more you read, the better it is for your own work, too. So it all works out.
And do you feel, when you read things, does it influence your, you have to sort of stay, put a, you know, a firewall between your own writing style and your own, you know, with all that reading? I mean, I sometimes preach to students to not ingest things that are going to be diametrically opposed to what they're
trying
to write while they're writing. How do you mitigate that in your own work?
It's not so much the style of writing that doesn't seem to influence me, because when I'm deep enough in the work, the voice is always there. But what I have to be careful of is I can't, when I'm writing something, I can't read books that are set in the same time period or that are similar. I mean, when I was reading my 1950s book, I couldn't read anything that was set in the 1950s because it just, I don't know, it just made me feel uneasy or anxious. And then I started to think, well, what if, you know, subconsciously I picked something up from somewhere else. I want to stay original. So I just wouldn't do it.
I made a mental note of something. You're teaching now at UCLA Extension. You have a class starting in a month, teaching
mm-hmm.
advanced novel writing online at UCLA Extension. Is that right?
Yep.
And do you have are you teaching anywhere else, or is that your...
No. I sometimes have. I do take on private students, and usually those are people who have completed manuscripts. And then I just work with them, and I go through the whole novel, and we talk about it, and, you know, they do rewrites, and that's incredibly gratifying. That's stuff that's really, really fun for me to do, and it's you know, it's fun to see this stuff develop, and it's, you know, it's even more fun when the books get out there so other people can see them too.
And do you differentiate the time that you spend reading student work with the time that you spend reading books for review, or is it just whatever you have to do is like your daily stack of things that you have to complete?
I think it's sort of whatever I have to do. I have it is sort of a daily stack of stuff to do. I mean, you must have the same problem because you do a lot of different things too. It's always a juggling act, sort of, right?
Yes, I do have. That's why I'm asking you, because I read my student work, and I have my own things that I want to read, and then I have a lot of films that I want to see or feel like I need to see. And yeah, it's definitely tough. I mean, it's tough to do everything. It is, but it's also fun.
Do you feel that your student work helps you in your writing?
I do. I feel like I've been teaching, you know, for 7 years, and I feel like I really, every time I work with a student on a project on their story outline or on their original script or on their rewrite, I feel like I'm problem solving and getting into their creative flow and seeing new things and also figuring out how to make things work.
Right.
And that strengthens my own abilities in my own writing. I think, I don't know if my writing's gotten better, but I think it keeps my writing alive. And I do feel like I have my faculty for perceiving work gets better and better. And I think that helps obviously with my own writing or
right.
process. Interesting. And it's really a gift. And it really surprised me. I never thought I could teach writing. I never thought I could teach anything. And I found that teaching really has the main thing that it's done is it reinvigorates, after being in the business for a long time, being in the industry as a screenwriter, it took me back to when I was just when I was a film student, when I was a fan, and when I just loved film and just, you know, loved to see old movies and new movies and that enthusiasm. And it, in order to teach screenwriters, I use examples from films, and I use, you know, the movies that I like and movies that contain elements that are relevant to what they're doing. And so it's turned me back into a fan. It really reignited my love of movies and took the industry component out of it for me in that realm. So whenever I'm teaching, I'm never in that world. I'm never in the business. I'm in this other place with it, in a more idealistic place, which is where I started. So I think that's why, you know, forever a teacher now.
It's funny you said that, because I always tell my students that I always feel like I'm in the trenches with them, because you are. You sort of, you take on this different, it's a whole different feel when you're teaching, and you, it is like rediscovering what you loved about it and that there are solutions to these problems, and it's really exciting and exhilarating when you find the solutions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what do you have time to see? I know you see a lot of films. What are your favorite films this year?
Let's see. Yeah, I see a lot of movies. Mostly now, though, unfortunately, a lot of them are on. I see them on video because I don't have time to go out. I really loved The Descendants. I thought that was a great film. I deeply admired Higher Ground, Vera Farmiga's movie. I love that.
Higher Ground was one of the best movies of the year, I think, for me. I saw it early in this sort of award season. I got the screener, and I was just blown away by it. And it's continued to stand up to so many of these films, which I've seen since then. What else?
I saw it. I liked Drive a whole lot, and I also liked Midnight in Paris, the Woody Allen film. I'm trying to think what else I've seen that I liked. And I actually saw last night, which I had never seen, a really old movie, Das Boot, about the German submarine. And I really loved it because it really made you feel that you were inside the submarine during World War II. And I was anxious through the whole movie, but it was sort of a delicious kind of anxiety.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's so good. It's a really long movie, but it's really, really well done. And it's a movie I always wanted to see, and I just never saw it. And it actually came on Netflix, and it's been sitting around our house for a month because I kept thinking, I don't really want to see it. But once it got on, I was riveted. Have you seen anything really great that I should see?
The two that you just named were two of the best. I really like 50-50.
Oh, yeah. I actually just saw that. That was really good, too.
And a studio movie that I absolutely loved was Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
But, you know, I saw that and I liked it, but for me nothing can compare to the very first early Charlton Heston,
I love the first one was great, but I felt like this, you know, for a reboot of this series, I felt like it was really an interesting film. What else did I see that I liked? I like The Iron Lady. I really liked.
I haven't seen that.
Meryl
I haven't
Streep's
seen that yet.
Performance was amazing. Mm-hmm. I liked Win Win.
That was really good. I forgot about that one. That was very good.
And do you watch television?
Oh yeah, I watch a whole lot of HBO.
How can you watch
drama?
Television when you have all those books to read every night? Do you sleep?
No, I don't. I don't. I'm a terrible sleeper. I'm usually up a lot. I like Boardwalk Empire a whole lot. I love Homeland. What else is on there? I don't know. I like all this. I like a lot of the stuff that's on HBO and AMC. Do you watch TV?
I do. I watch a few series. We watch, Enlightened, we've been watching.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I was really worried because I heard that a lot of people weren't responding to that show and they might cancel it.
Yeah,
they're bringing it back.
A lot of people I've heard, you're not the first person who said, I was so worried they weren't going to bring it back because it's definitely not a point of view that gets expressed much in television, the one you see in that film, in that show. We watched Friday Night Lights. We watched the entire 5 seasons of Friday Night Lights, which we just love.
People do love that. I just never saw that particular one.
Did you try it? You got to try the first season.
Okay, I'll try to find it. But yeah, there's definitely like gritty, interesting dramas on TV, so that's cool.
Yeah, television's in a definitely in a.
Oh yeah, it's much much different.
And where are you with your? You wrote the screenplay for Pictures of You, and do you have a completed version?
I do. I'm just waiting until you can start. So I'm going to submit to Sundance. I guess you can submit in February, and I'm going to submit to the Nichols. Which also is in February, and then we'll see what happens.
And what's your relationship to the idea of it as a film? I mean, seeing it as a film or having it be in that realm, what does that mean to you in terms of the book?
Well, I've had other books optioned, and I've worked with producers before, and I know that What goes on the screen from a book is usually very different than what's in the book, and I'm fine with that. And to me, it's just another piece of the puzzle. How is it going to be different? And I also know pretty much that I will be relinquishing most, if not all, of the control, and that's all right. I'm just intensely curious about, you know, the whole process, and I want to be a part of the process, and it's sort of a new experience, and I want to do it. And I've had meetings with producers about Pictures of You, but nothing's happened. Nothing's gone beyond the discussion stage. Either people couldn't get the whole package together, or any number of reasons.
Did they try and get certain actors for it, or they tried to submit it to a star? Or
well, I have a film agent, and I have a film manager out in L.A. who's helping me and advising me. So it hasn't really gotten to those parts yet. Mostly a lot of what I do is go on Facebook and find directors or producers or actors, and I just sort of contact them and try to make contact and see if they're interested, and sometimes they are and sometimes they're not, and I figure all I have to lose is my pride, and that's been gone a long time ago, so that doesn't really matter.
So how do you contact them? You just friend them on Facebook, and then offer them your book?
I contact them on Facebook, and usually I introduce myself, and I say, I'm a New York Times bestselling author, and I've also written scripts, and then I tell them why I'm contacting them, why I admire their work, and usually I say something about it, and then I just say politely, I know this is probably ridiculous, but would you ever consider, I'd like to send you my book, and maybe you'd like it. If you like the book, I'd be happy to send you a script. And sometimes they say yes. So, I never know. You never know.
All right. That's a good, is that a tip for people to do that, you think? What is your manager say?
I think that people should be in with novels and scripts. I think the whole thing is that, I was told a lot of times in my early career not to do certain things because they weren't done, or there were certain rules, and I found that life is really short, and you should be really brave and bold and take a chance, and you really have nothing to lose except people can say no, but at least you tried.
Yeah, that's magic, and that's your magic, and that's true, and I think I think we should end on that note, because I think I'm inspired by that, and I think that's the way to pursue any of this. And as a writer, that's what we do in facing the page every day.
Right. Well, this was just a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm so excited about your novel coming out, and I want you to come on my blog so I can interview you in print.
Oh, okay. I'd love to. Thank you very much. All right, and thank you, Carolyn. I thank you for everything, and you're an inspiration to me in so many ways, and I love your book, and we will talk soon. It was great to speak with you today.
You too, and I love Peloponnesia, and everybody should buy it when it comes out in February.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Left you on the debris at the Sunday morning market. You were sorting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. And that old familiar love song. top of the stairs. At the depot, with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working.